tech. I said I'd get crypto. Has the Solomon family changed its view on crypto? Do you own Bitcoin or Ethereum personally?
I don't personally own Bitcoin or Ethereum, and I don't have a strong view. When you say I've changed my view, I don't know what you think my view is. My view on Bitcoin, for example, is I really don't know, but it's really not something, you know, individually that's important to me.
Right.
I'm a big believer in the digitization that is occurring and the disruption that's occurring in the way financial services are delivered, as I said to you, both for institutions and for individuals. I think it's a massive shift. We're trying to participate in it based on what we're doing around Goldman Sachs Marcus and our digital banking platform.
But do you want your clients in it?
I'm sorry?
Do you want your clients in it?
I want our clients to do what they think they want to do. As a speculative asset, is it interesting? And are some of our clients participating? Absolutely. But whether it goes up or down, my guess is, look at the last week. It's going to go up. It's going to go down. I don't know what the permanent state of Bitcoin is, but I think Bitcoin is really not the key thing. The key thing is how can blockchain or other technologies that are not developed yet accelerate the pace of the digitization of the way financial services are delivered? And I just talked to you about our digital bank. You know that we just made an announcement out at AWS reInvent about a platform, the financial cloud, that we're building in partnership with AWS for institutional clients. All of that is the changing of the digital processes that kind of lubricate the way financial services are delivered. And I think that's a big opportunity, and we're excited about that.
And that gives your clients almost direct access.
Happy Bitcoin Tuesday, freaks. It's your boy, Matt Odell, here for another Citadel Dispatch, the interactive live show about Bitcoin distributed systems, privacy, and open source software. That dude on the clip was the CEO of Goldman Sachs, showing the whole world that he is completely unaware of the revolution that is Bitcoin. If you do not think it's early, you are not going to make it. We have a very special show on deck here for you today. It's a conversation that I've been looking forward to with two good friends. Before we get started, I just wanted to do a shout out to the ride or die who continue to support the show, keep it ad free and sponsor free, and focus on actionable Bitcoin discussion. You guys make Dispatch happen every week, and I really do appreciate it. And a massive shout out to the ride or die freaks who join us in the live chat, providing your comments and your questions. You make this show unique. Keep it coming. I do appreciate you. The easiest way to support Dispatch is through podcasting 2.0 apps. My two favorites are Fountain Podcasts and Breeze. That's Breez. If you use those apps, you can load it up with sats. You can search Citadel Dispatch, and you can stream sats directly to my Lightning node. You can also support the show by going to CitadelDispatch.com, where you can support it through Lightning or through my samurai pay name, which is Odell. Very easy to remember. So thank you again for your support. You can also buy a hat if you want to support the show. A lot of freaks prefer to go that method. They've been sold out for a long time, but they are back in stock, and they are shipping globally. They should arrive before Christmas unless you're located in Australia, where shipping takes longer, and then they'll probably arrive first week of January. If you want a hat, CitadelDispatch.com/stack. You can also get a flask, magnets, or pins through that link. So thank you, freaks. This is Citadel Dispatch 47. We're going to be focusing on the future of Bitcoin nodes, and specifically Noddle's new Noddleito. They're calling it the Noddle Lite, but I hope by the end of this conversation, we will have agreed that it will be referred to as the Noddleito going forward. I got two of my good friends here, the founders of Noddle. We have Keto Miner, return guest. How's it going, Keto Miner?
What's up, Freaks? Good to be here again.
And we have Askwu. How's it going, Askwu?
I'm good. Hi, guys.
I think it's Askew's first time on Dispatch, so give him a warm welcome. Thank you for finally joining us. So first off, my head's a little all over the place. I am in the process of moving. I'm literally surrounded by boxes right now, so I apologize to the freaks, if you can tell. We are going to make this conversation, the show must go on, so we're going to make this conversation happen, and I am looking forward to it. We have, where should we get started? I think an interesting place to get started here is Askew just got back from El Salvador. What were your experiences like in El Salvador? Did it change like your view on how to move forward, both as a Bitcoiner and as a founder of a Bitcoin company focused on nodes?
I don't know. You just mentioned Nodalito, actually. I was reading through the comments, you know, the moment you start the show, the comments pour in, which is really funny. And before you said anything, Crypto Clydesdale went up and said something about Nodalito. So one of the things that I'm really curious about here is, does that name catch on? Because you're a big supporter of it, I think. CoinShare is the one who came up with it, and we kind of like it. It's growing on us. So if anybody wants to tell us how they feel about it, I'm really curious.
I mean, Nodalito is clearly the better name.
It seems to be. So we will be the end of the show.
It's the little Noddle. Exactly. It's fucking perfect.
Exactly. Sam agrees.
So, I mean, we can jump in. We can just jump directly into the Nodalito. I mean, we have a lot to talk about there. But before I'm not going to just let you off the hook. Your experience in El Salvador didn't change your perspective at all?
It was a little bit of an eye-opener just because I think it's a new stage. I agree with you when you say it's super early. I still think it's super early. I tell everybody who wants to hear that it's still super early. But I think when we launched the first Nodal a few years ago, Lightning had just come out and it wasn't that big of a deal yet. It's really become a big deal, Lightning, last year. And we felt a big difference. And now, like, countries being onboarded to Bitcoin is another big stage. And, you know, you would have told me that a couple years ago. That's what we wanted to see, but I didn't think it was that close. And it's here. It's real. I mean, it's a really big deal. So it's very humbling to see how much has been done. And yet, you know, just realize how much you still have to do in a way, but it's catching on big time.
So
and anybody who's missed it, really, I mean, it's stupid not to go. You should go within the year, you know, go check it out.
Are you talking to me?
Well, no, yes, I am. I'm talking to you.
Askew made sure to, he made sure to message me many times about me not making the trip to El Salvador yet and not going down with him. So I will apologize to you on air that I wasn't able to make it happen. But I do intend to go very soon. I think he also, you like sent out a subtweet where you were kind of going after me a little bit for not going. So
no, that was just a personal message, just you.
It's probably a good idea to go outside of this conference context though.
To see what do you mean?
It really looks like.
Oh yeah, I mean that was my excuse as well. But
yeah, and honestly,
at the end of the day, it's an excuse.
Yeah, but I think a lot of people said, and that's how I feel at least. You know, come back every year for 5 years, see how much of a difference like you can notice on site is probably a really smart thing to do. But that being said, Bitcoiners are just going to pour in every single week into the country, and not only like San Salvador, El Zante, etc., but like all over the place, probably the neighboring countries too. And they'll get a continuous flow of Bitcoiners coming in now. And that I think is really interesting. So you can go whenever you want, really.
Love to see it.
Yeah.
Were you there for the actual, when they announced the Bitcoin City and the Bitcoin bonds?
Yeah. I was getting a round of beers for the friends.
What were your thoughts on that?
It was a weird experience. I think you get into the because it's a nightclub, basically. You go into the nightclub, you wait for the president for 2 hours till it fills up. It's really packed. AC/DC, fireworks, all this shit, you know. But it was the first time when you enter the club, instead of having like a VIP lane, you have the big corner lane kind of thing. So they park us all in front of him. And while he makes his announcement, he's actually looking at us. Like, it's the first time like people talk to us as a Bitcoin crowd directly, saying, it's you guys we want here because we believe in what you guys are doing. There's value that you guys add that we think beats the market. And we want to make it known to the entire world that we're going to cater to you and compete with them on, you know, taxes and in basically economic strategy. So it's the first time they, like, a government talks to us as Bitcoiners. And I was there in the crowd, and it's kind of weird. Mixed feelings, but it's interesting.
It's been something that a lot of us Bitcoiners have been expecting for a while, and it's kind of unreal. I mean, I wasn't there, but I saw, you know, the tweets coming out live as it was happening. It's kind of unreal to see it happen. I mean, you know, good friend Parker Lewis, you know, he likes to say gradually then suddenly, and it really felt like a gradually then suddenly kind of situation where up until the exact point where it happens, it feels like, oh, well, it will take a while before you start to see a nation state really court Bitcoiners and lean into Bitcoin hard and actually have, you know, a relatively coherent long-term Bitcoin strategy. And then before you know it, it's actually happening, which is pretty crazy.
Yeah, and I think that's the experience. Once you go there and you see it, you're like, well, it doesn't make that much difference, and yet the world will never be the same again.
Exactly.
Because they took that extra step. And it's fun to be there to see it.
And now everyone's like, okay, what's the next country? You like immediately move on to where do we go here from here, you know?
Yeah, I guess that's one of my hopes, that several countries follow up soon so that they don't get to be singled out and become too big of a target. Because I'd be afraid if I were him. That's one thing. And two, so that they can run their own experiments and potentially do it differently, because, you know, that's just one example. They'll do it one way. There's probably other ways to do it. The more the better, I guess.
100%. I mean, it's just like everything else in Bitcoin. When you have a first mover, they obviously have an advantage, but in terms of censorship resistance and distribution, you want some competition there. You want other people joining the fray. I think it's as true for countries as it is for ASIC producers or node producers or wallets, mobile wallets, whatever it is in Bitcoin land. You want as many options as possible, and they kind of help protect each other.
Absolutely.
So let's bring it back to Noddle. I mean, so Noddle is a company that you guys both founded that was at the forefront of this idea of a plug-and-play node box. I remember when the first Noddle came out, all these players that you see today didn't really exist. I'm pretty sure MyNode didn't exist. Umbral didn't exist. I don't think Raspi Blitz existed yet, but the Raspi Bolt project existed.
I think it did, but at some very early version of it.
Yeah, it was super early. Lightning was super early. I had the original Noddle. I think I was like one of the first 10 or 15 people to have the original Noddle. When was that? What year was that? 2019, 2018?
2018, I believe.
Yeah, end of 2018.
Yeah.
Yeah, So I think I got the original Noddle January 2019.
Yeah, you got one of the first 21.
Yeah, I still have it. You guys signed it. Then you came out with the Noddle Dojo, which is a more high-end box. It had redundant drives on it, redundant SSDs. It was encrypted by default. It had a kill switch. It still exists. You guys still sell it. I guess that came like a year later. I have the first one that was produced. Very proudly still own both of those Noddles. And now we have this new product, the Noddle Lite. So those first two Noddles were very much geared to the enthusiast crowd, to the Bitcoiner that is obsessed with Bitcoin, that wants to upgrade their experience and tinker with the tools. It feels like the Noddleito, or the Noddle Lite, as you call it, is a different approach here. It's geared towards this new class of Bitcoiner that's, you know, maybe a merchant, maybe in a developing world, maybe doesn't really know that much about Bitcoin yet. What is your perspective there on how you view your customers evolving and, you know, the birth of the Noddleito?
Well, we think that not everybody wants to host their box at home or in their office, because some people can't and some people just don't have a good place for that or good connectivity or whatever. So we actually started with the Noddle Cloud, which is the cloud version of the boxes. It provides the same services. It runs your full node Bitcoin Core with LND, BTC Pay Server, the whole stack. And then we started thinking, like, not everybody wants to run like the full stack, and not everybody needs to run the full stack. But having the Lightning node running in some hosting provider actually is a kind of custody. And what we wanted to solve is, like, the user will still run the Lightning part behind some shitty connection, as long as it's connected 24/7. Doesn't have to be fast, doesn't have to be very reliable. And use all the other services which don't include any wallets. Because if you run BTC Pay Server in the cloud, it doesn't have any private keys. It only has your XPub. And for Lightning, you still need this LND or C-Lightning or whatever running somewhere. So instead of trying some hybrid approach like Blockstream project, I forgot the name, just started, our Voltage, who like split the keys between the node and your computer. We said, okay, let's just put the LND on-premises. You own your LND. It's in a box in your place. It VPNs back to our servers running BTC Pay Server, or it can also VPN back to a big Noddle running somewhere else. So you can have like one Noddle dojo running in some community, and then people are just connecting additional LNDs to that node. That's the big idea behind it. And of course, there is like an opportunity to make something lighter and cheaper. So emerging markets are probably a good place to try to sell that. But it's not like the first reason for doing it.
So, I mean, I kind of jumped the gun here. We have the Noddle Lite. To the people who are watching the video streams, and just to remind everyone, all of our fantastic Dispatch audience, if you are new to Dispatch, the way you can participate in the live chat or watch it live through video is through Twitter, Twitch, or YouTube. You can access those links at SilloDispatch.com when we're doing the show. The videos are posted afterwards to BitcoinTV.com, and they're also still available on YouTube and Twitch. All those links are at SilloDispatch.com. To our people that are watching it, I'm going to bring up a little picture of the Noddleito. So the idea of the Noddleito is a low-cost device. Wait, what is the idea of the Noddleito is a low-cost device that runs Lightning locally for a merchant.
Yeah, so let's debunk many things that people asked on Twitter so far. Like, it's not a satellite device, it's not a mesh device, it has only Ethernet and Wi-Fi. We are working on other things with satellites and mesh networks, but that's a story for another day. This one is just a simple LND in a box with a VPN capability to dial back into a centralized BTC Pay server.
So it's not running Bitcoin. It's not running Bitcoin Core on the device. It's not running BTC Pay on the device. It's only running LND.
Yeah.
LND plus the tooling around LND. So RTL, the Sphinx relay, and so on. Only small things.
Originally, the idea came after the announcement by Jack Mahler's that El Salvador was going to pass that new law, you know. And when we heard about El Salvador, Kito was thinking, this is going to happen super fast. They're going to have to convert an entire country. Merchants are going to have to be onboarded fast, etc. What could we potentially do, not necessarily us, but anyone, to kind of prevent them from being onboarded to like custodial tools, private tools, et cetera, et cetera? So that was the question, really. Then when we looked at what we did with Noddle, we thought there's no real way for us to service them because the devices we build, you know, are great for what they do, but you can't really sell those devices to people there because of the price, because of the knowledge needed maybe to operate them, et cetera, et cetera. And eventually Kito came up with the approach of saying, you want users, end users, to actually have their own keys, control their own keys, the LND keys, if they're running a BTC Pay store. And they need to have a device to do it, but they don't necessarily need the processing behind like Bitcoin Core, actually running BTC Pay server, et cetera, that we could do for them with the infrastructure. And then he came up with a solution, which is kind of hybrid and new because I don't think anybody does that kind of stuff today. But that's part of the reasoning.
So when you talk about custodial solutions, I mean, you were in El Salvador. I saw the video and heard you in the background where they were having issues with Chivo, which is the government's custodial wallet that they provide. This is supposed to be an alternative for a merchant there instead of using something like that or using a different mobile wallet, correct?
Yeah. It could be. But then you could use it in any other country too, you know. But then from a price perspective, you could probably help people there with like simpler, lighter devices. And that's the first step in that direction.
So the main thought here is by removing Bitcoin D, removing Bitcoin Core, removing BTC Pay, putting those in your cloud infrastructure, which by the way, a lot of freaks probably aren't aware. You guys for the last year or so have been working on building out Noddle Cloud, which is a key aspect of this component here. A key aspect of the Noddleito is that you have this Noddle Cloud infrastructure. The reasoning for removing that is primarily cost and bandwidth, right? Getting the cost down of the Noddleito to a sub $100 price point. I don't think you guys have actually announced the price point yet. Are you going to announce it on the show?
No, we're not. But when the news came out, sorry, we'll come back to announce it later. When the news came out, it came out in BTC Mag. I think they listed under $200, which wasn't exactly what we had in mind. So it'll be cheaper than that anyways. Then it just depends what you package with the hardware because you might have services with it.
But that's the main reason, right? So the main reason is getting cost and I guess getting cost down, right? Because by moving Bitcoin Core and BTC Pay to the cloud, you're able to ship a product that is less powerful without an SSD.
Less powerful, cheaper, probably leaner if some of the management is done somewhere else. And doesn't need as many resources from a network perspective, like Kito mentioned earlier.
So how do you envision, so I guess, And there is still some trust here, and it's about minimizing the trust. It's about the trust trade-off, right?
Yeah, I think one thing that was interesting with the El Salvador example was the Bitcoin Beach wallet, actually, that the team at Galloy are pushing that concept of like community wallet, community custody, et cetera. And so they have some kind of custodial model where keys, I don't know how many keys they have in the community, but there's several people who manage the keys for the entire village, basically. And so that's one model. Okay.
The Bitcoin Beach wallet specifically, just to go into that, is the majority of funds are held in multi-sig on chain by trusted members of the community. And then they have a custodial Lightning wallet portion that is not multi-sig. So in that situation, they're making that trust trade-off that even if that Lightning wallet gets hacked or compromised or exit scammed, the overwhelming majority of funds will still be held in multi-sig. And as long as a quorum of those trusted community members aren't malicious and work together, those funds should be safe. And as a result, you get an easier UX and you don't have to deal with like liquidity issues and stuff like that that we see on Lightning.
So what happens if tomorrow you have, so that's one community that is now famous in the entire world because of what happened in El Salvador. There's other communities, I understand, in other countries that are starting to build projects, either similar or their own versions of it. But what if you could have one full node in a community and then a bunch of lighter devices managed by the merchants, and have another model of community set up where the merchant still manages their Lightning keys?
So presumably here you could imagine a situation where there are 40 Nautilitos in San Salvador. And then they're connecting, instead of connecting to the Nautil cloud for that backend, they could be connecting to someone's Nautil dojo that's in the community that they trust.
For example.
Cool.
That's like a mega Uncle Jim model.
You're like professionalizing the Uncle Jim model.
Yeah. And if you do it with an Uncle Dojo, with a Nautil dojo, it's the Uncle Sam model, basically.
In Uncle Dojo. Why Uncle Sam?
Because Samurai Wallet.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. So this is interesting. So when we imagine a Nautilito in practice, how do you like see that unfolding? They're still gonna run into, so users are holding their own Lightning keys. That wallet is a hot wallet. That one's always connected. They're getting a trusted source of information in terms of the Bitcoin chain. What kind of trust do they have to put into that BTC Pay instance?
That's a good question, actually. Worst case scenario, we could like hijack all the BTC Pay accounts and point them at our Lightning nodes instead. They can see on their side in Artia or other tools that the invoice was actually created and paid to their node.
Future funds. You can like man in the middle future funds.
Yeah,
but you can't necessarily claw back the funds that have already been paid and accepted.
Yeah, and that's also true for on-chain payments. I could like just take a shared BTC Pay instance and put my XPub everywhere.
And the belief is that these merchants are going to be accepting both on-chain and Lightning.
Probably on-chain, at least as a fallback.
Are the on-chain keys held on the Nautilito as well?
There aren't any on-chain keys, just the XPub on the BTC Pay server itself. they still have need some type of hardware wallet for the on-chain part.
Oh, like a hardware wallet or like a mobile wallet or something like that where the funds are being directed. Okay, that makes sense to me. Okay, so when we have these merchants, they have a Nautilito in their store. They probably have it connected via Wi-Fi, but it also has an Ethernet port. They can connect it via Ethernet. What are they using to actually invoice the customers? Are they got like a are they using a mobile phone? Are they using a tablet? Like, how does that interaction with their customer actually look like?
Well, they if it's a physical business, they can just use Zap on their phone, for example, to
or
connect
Zeus.
Back to that. Yeah, or Zeus.
That's how you envision it? You expect them to have Zeus on their phone connected to their Nautilito by scanning a QR code?
Yeah,
and then
I guess
invoice
for,
that way.
For physical businesses, that's what makes the most sense.
Do you think this is going to be primarily used for physical businesses? Like, what do you think the breakdown is going to be versus online versus physical? I mean, I imagine the overwhelming majority of this target market has got to be physical sales now.
Yeah, in emerging markets, definitely more physical. I mean, I have no idea. I probably don't even have any online type of business right now. Because of being unbanked, so not having any way to pay online. But that's also maybe some market which could just begin thanks to Bitcoin. Like first solve the payment issue, then can start doing e-commerce.
Fair enough. Cool. So Freaks, I will remind you, if you have any questions, feel free to put them in the live chat and we will answer them. When do you guys think the Nautilito is going to ship? Tough question.
We hate dates. First half of next year. Very conservative.
On that note, you guys want to talk at all about, you know, a lot of us have noticed that you've had some supply chain issues with the existing Nautil fleet. Do you want to talk about that experience at all? Like, where do you stand on that right now?
Well, what I can say right now is that if you want a Nautil Dojo, you should probably go to the store.
Are they available now?
Maybe. we have some supply chain issues, which actually is not like shortage in our case. It's rather like a slow age. And some prices become unpredictable, which sucks. But we have some assembly / hardware issues which we are trying to solve. So we are doing more testing on each device than we used to. We used to run them for 2 days before shipping them. Now we keep them a whole week.
What's the reasoning for that?
Because
it's quality control?
Yeah, it's quality control. They usually fail like between days 3 and 5, if they do.
Interesting.
And we kind of have an idea of what's going on, but it's very hard to prove and go to see the supplier and tell them that's the problem, please fix it. We are actively working on that and also on buying more components to build more and just build more, test more, and ship more.
What are the
people who aren't necessarily aware of, like, you know, what Nautil looks like? The first batch of nodes we sold were actually pre-ordered, so people paid us up front. We used the money to buy components. We built the nodes and then we shipped them a couple, I don't know, months later maybe or something. At first. And then we use the proceeds to buy more hardware, et cetera, to build more nodes, et cetera. But this was entirely bootstrapped. It's a really small operation. Sometimes people don't necessarily realize it. but it's just a very small outfit. And it's very manual. It's very artisanal. And, you know, some people aren't aware of it, but, you know, it's just how it is.
Yeah, I mean, Kido's literally building them in his living room, right?
Exactly. Yeah, he outsourced this to his wife, actually.
The dynamic duo.
Yeah,
Mr. and Mrs. Kido.
She's doing all the building, installing and testing now, so I don't have to.
I had the pleasure of meeting Miss Kido, and she's a great lady. So you're very, yeah, I didn't know if I should say that or not, but yeah, Enriga. So you're very lucky you're both very lucky to have each other. And then this is so you have three models right now. You have, what are you calling this? You're calling this the Noddle one. By the way, that's noddle.it is their website, NODL.IT. The Noddle one, it's like the current entry level device. You have the Noddle Dojo, which is more expensive, has better specs. And then now you have this new one, which kind of slots in underneath the two of them, which you're calling the Noddle Light. And once again, I think the biggest differentiation here is I feel like your previous hardware attempts has been a focus on this more enthusiast crowd, this more ride or die Bitcoiner crowd. And this feels like more of a mainstream product. With a completely different demographic. So what is the Noddle Light? Oh, fuck. I can't believe I called it the Noddle Light.
There's a lot more people in this space than you used to have. Honestly, when you're trying to build a Lightning node 3 years ago, if you weren't going for the people who knew about it and who were really like early, you weren't talking to anyone at all. And you see a lot of people now who are super bullish on Lightning. You didn't get the same stuff from them like a couple years ago. So there's been a big change. Honestly, we've noticed that. And there's a lot more people coming in the space. It's on TV every day. If you watch TV, you know. Obviously, the demographics are not the same.
We decided to make Noddle into a commercial product when Lightning and BTC Pay Server went mainstream. I don't think even Neutrino existed back then. And last year, the compact filters were finally merged into Bitcoin Core. So we see more and more Neutrino servers. So basically what we are doing now with this new Noddle wasn't that possible even a year ago because...
So the Noddleito is... The Noddleito is using Neutrino.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's using an open standard to connect. You want to explain to the freaks what Neutrino is?
I can try. It's a type of very light Bitcoin node running inside LND, which uses compact filters, which is kind of the same idea as an SPV wallet, basically.
But it's a little bit different than an SPV wallet, trust-wise.
Yeah, that's a big difference.
Kido, tell me if I explain it well. I mean, you're European, so you might not understand my metaphor. So instead of sending full blocks to the Noddleito, Neutrino allows you to, which are heavy on bandwidth, but you need a lot of internet for it. You're sending the Spark notes. You're basically sending a summary of the blocks. And then if the Noddleito sees something in those Spark notes that they need, it'll then pull that specific block and only that block rather than every block as it comes in.
Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate. And it comes with some downsides. I don't know if there is a fix for that or if it's like at the protocol level and it can be fixed. But for example, Neutrino nodes don't track the closing transactions of channels. So they have to wait until the channels time out before noticing that they are closed. So it's not perfect, but that's also why we want this product to come standard with a channel and liquidity management service.
Okay, so that was my next question. I mean, liquidity seems to be the major hurdle for a sovereign Lightning merchant, specifically inbound liquidity, the ability to receive payments on Lightning. How do you guys aim to solve that? or mitigate it?
Well, as the opening side to our customers, managing inbound liquidity for them is the easier side. Usually the problem we have is like people start running a node, they open a channel, they have only outbound and they need inbound. Since we will be the opening side, at least for the first channel, of course, people are free to open other channels, but we want to guarantee the users that the channel that we have, we are with us, will be monitored, and every time they will be missing liquidity, we'll be just adding, I don't know, a new channel or some kind of rebalance or whatever.
Interesting. So you're basically watching their channels, and then if you notice liquidity drop, you're going to open a channel from one of your nodes to them.
Yeah. And that's probably the biggest part of the work, because like making the device and installing the same stuff as we are used to install on our other boxes is the easy side. But the complicated part is learning ourselves and understanding how and when to do that. For example, like we'll probably have some very small transactions on some nodes and some average or big on others. How do we handle that? Do we like make some assumptions in advance, asking people what is your like average transaction size? I don't know. That's all the questions we have to answer.
And I guess you've had some practice with this, running the nodes behind Sphinx, right?
Yeah, which actually are completely different anyway, because they have like very symmetric transactions. Because for every message you send, you receive a confirmation, which gives you your money back. So if you don't receive like any donations or any boosts, your balance will basically never move.
It's just going back and forth.
Yeah, just going back and forth. If you're using managed nodes with zero fees, if you're running some public routing nodes, it can be much more than zero fees on each. So, yeah. And we are running multiple stores as well for ourselves and for other people. So we see how it works. Like we actually sold one Dojo with a Lightning transaction the other day. Like, I've seen the transaction on the store.
Wait, a full Noddle Dojo?
Yeah.
I mean, what is that? That's like $900?
Yeah.
Something like that?
$900 in one Lightning transaction.
So that's like 2 million sats?
It was more back then. It was more. Don't remember the exact amount. But wow. I spent like half an hour looking at the on-chain wallet trying to find the payment and couldn't find it. And then I said, maybe it's Lightning.
So then you have this Noddle Cloud product. Like, where do you see the Noddle Clouds slotting in? Are there going to, do you think there'd be some merchants that just skip out on the Noddleito and they just run everything on your cloud infrastructure rather than actually having a piece of hardware?
I guess it mostly depends on what's your like risk assessment of your local jurisdiction and the jurisdiction we're hosting the Noddle Clouds in. My assumption is really that at some point, if they really want to, they can qualify any type of hosting as custodial. So if the user or the server is in a jurisdiction where that can happen, I would rather advise to self-host the Lightning part.
Because then they have the keys on their own hardware rather than...
Yeah,
encrypted
then
the cloud.
The transaction never touches our servers.
Because right now, if someone uses just Noddle Cloud by itself or something like Voltage, which offers cloud LND, the keys are encrypted, but there's still a element of trust there, right? There's a large element of trust there that you could then steal funds or compromise funds.
It's increasingly hard, but I would say with enough willpower, it's still possible.
But the Noddleito takes that a step further. The keys are held on hardware that the user controls. Yeah. So you can't do that step, but you can still do the man in the middle step.
Yeah.
Cool. So if I have the Nautilito in my hand, I open it up. What's inside the Nautilito? Are you sharing that?
I've shared it on Twitter before. It's a RockPi S, so we are still working with boards from the same company, which is Racha in China, and the RockPi S is basically what the new Raspberry Pi Zero 2 is, except it exists for 3 or 4 years already. So it has half of gig of RAM and 4 64-bit cores. And then the usual Ethernet, SD card, Wi-Fi. And as I understand it, I haven't tried it yet, but the hardware should allow us to make a computer, networkless setup in the sense that you could connect your computer straight to the device to set up the Wi-Fi and parameters and such. So you would not even have to connect it to a wired network the first time. Which in some places can be good.
So what, you connect the Nautilito directly to the computer, what, with an Ethernet cable?
No, with a USB cable. So USB, and it shows up the same as an Android phone using the ADB protocol. So we could make a small app using the ADB protocol, like to set up the basic parameters of the device, like passwords, Wi-Fi, and so on.
Interesting.
And then you just unplug it from your computer, you plug it into the power adapter instead, and that's it. You're good to go.
And then it connects to Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
But then what is that solving? Because couldn't you...
That's isn't, solving like, the... Yeah, go on. I need a wired router with one free port on it to connect the box, and then I need to find its name on the network, and half of the times it doesn't work because routers suck.
Right. And this is the first Noddle that actually has Wi-Fi built in.
Yeah.
Right. Because the other Noddles, you connect Ethernet to the router. And
yeah,
then...
we always refuse to include any radios in our devices, but unfortunately, these boards don't exist without radios.
And it's kind of useful in this... And for this demographic. I mean, most people aren't going to use...
You could even run it behind your mobile phone hotspot or whatever.
Right. So on that note, is there any, did you give any thought to actually putting, you know, a SIM card slot on it so you didn't need a mobile phone hotspot?
Well, it has a USB port, so technically you could use a USB modem, a GSM modem in it, like 3G, 4G modem.
We have someone in Mexico who'd like to add that to the boards.
Where you could just connect it. As long as you have a modem which has Linux drivers, it should work out of the box.
But I guess there's no reason to necessarily build it in if you can either use a mobile hotspot or a USB modem to connect yourself.
Yeah, USB modems are so cheap now that it doesn't make much sense.
Cool.
And on the other side of the spectrum, if you add a small additional board inside, it can be powered with power over Ethernet. So in a totally different setup, if you want to host like a farm of 40 Nautilitos in some place, you could just buy a power over Ethernet network switch and plug them directly into the network switch and don't use any external power adapter.
That's cool. I like that idea. I don't know how many people are going to use
it. Data center. Oh.
But what, like if you wanted to set, why, but I guess that's interesting. What kind of use case would that end up, like, how would you end up seeing a use case like that?
Well, you know, I always mentioned like, instead of hosting virtual machines on server, just having like, data center ready version of the Noddle boxes that we could just put in some big chassis and have like 50 of them running in a space of one server. So I'm thinking this kind of application, like still hosted, but dedicated hardware for each user.
Do you remember when that company had, they were US based, they had the over the air TV antennas? Where they like, they hosted that badly. Yeah, but they like got around like the regulations about streaming network TV because each person had their own over the air TV antenna located in some server farm.
Yeah, the assumption was that if they use one TV antenna and tuner for each user, it's the same as having the receiver at home.
And then they got the shit suit out of them.
Yeah, that didn't fly.
They were like the hottest tech company for like 3 months, and then everything went to shit. So there's a bunch of freaks out here that are wondering. I imagine this is where my head would go. So the product very much to me seems like it's geared towards an end user that's trying to receive payments. Do you think the hardware is like powerful enough or even well suited for someone who wants to run like a always on routing node?
Definitely not.
And why is that?
It's a device suited to generate a few invoices per minute, probably. So, you could use it as a routing node, but you will not route like some big quantities of transaction on it.
And what's the bottleneck there? Processing power?
Processing power is the size of the RAM on the device, because basically to run it has to swap, and if you can afford, when you're a merchant in your physical store and it takes 2 seconds to generate an invoice, that's okay. But when you're routing, that's a different story. It will penalize your node, like you will not get a good score and so on. So yeah, I would not advise doing that, probably. I mean, someone has to test.
This is what I love about you, Kira. I would not advise of doing that, probably. So what about the whole aspect of using Neutrino? Is there like trust issues there if you have channels open with people that, I mean, we hear Lightning devs say this all the time, just with any old Lightning nodes, full Lightning nodes, with Bitcoin Core backing them locally, that you should not have channels open with people you don't trust explicitly, even though we all do anyway. In that case, our nodes are able to see if they're online or if they're using a watchtower and they're offline, they're able to see if there is malicious behavior from a channel partner. The fact that with Neutrino, you mentioned this thing where you're not seeing the closed transaction until after the channel times out. Is there an additional trust issue there with having channels open with people that could be malicious?
I'm not sure. I would say no, but I'm not 100% sure. I'm too stupid to ask.
But like, if so you're saying it's not seeing the closed channel transaction. Would it see me broadcast a bad state if I was connected with, if I had a channel open with an Analito? It would see that part.
That's actually a very good question, which we should ask Lightning Labs.
Well, this is why I love Dispatch. Okay, well, definitely ask that question. That seems important. But I guess in this case, most merchants that are using Natalito will be, their channel capacity will be coming from your nodes.
Well, if they want to use our channel management service, yes. Which is kind of the point of the thing. And also, I just made a note at the same time, like include watchtowers in the service package.
You're welcome. I still think this concept of like one person in the community running a proper node, I guess we need like new terminology, but like a a completely full node and then them acting as the backing infrastructure, then in that case, they'd be trusting that person who's running like a Noddle Dojo or a Raspberry Blitz or something.
That guy can also be providing the Neutrino, like, let's call it server to all these nodes.
Because it's completely open. So like someone can get a Nodalito and then instead of using Noddle Cloud, their Uncle Jim could be using like a Raspberry Blitz or something.
Yeah, totally.
That's pretty cool.
At some point, you need to call it like it is. It's actually, you need someone to run infrastructure for you because you want high availability. You want to be able to have some kind of trust in the setup, et cetera. You also need someone to provide liquidity. It might be the same person, but it might be someone else behind it that you don't see because it's abstracted from the user's perspective. But these are the type of services that you see today in the fiat world. They're just not done in Bitcoin yet. This is maybe one step further in figuring out the right model of who runs really infrastructure, who runs services, who provides liquidity, who provides other components of, you know, the end user experiments, basically.
Right. So in your case, yeah, go on.
Yeah, no, sorry. And that's what, like, you can do sometimes with the cloud services that maybe is not as easily understandable for people is, like, if you have customers, merchants that say, okay, I don't know how to do it. I don't necessarily want to do it. It's not my main business. So I just want to make sure it's running 24/7. I don't think there's a single player today that does it with a guaranteed, you know, uptime, channel management, liquidity, et cetera. But within a year or so, you'll have those people doing it for you. So people need to find a way to do it, because that's what's expected from the user perspective. And now you have new users who don't want to go into the details as much as we do, maybe, that will want some kind of professional setup.
So, I mean, reading between the lines, that's the goal of Noddle Cloud. Obviously, that kind of uptime, that kind of infrastructure, that kind of channel management is not free. How do you perceive that model going forward? Is that like going to be a subscription model? Is that a yearly subscription model? Like, how does that look?
Kind of like the mobile phone market. You'll be free to buy the device and pay for the service, or get the device subsidized by paying more for the service and not paying the device. That's the baseline we have now.
So presumably someone can get a Nodalito with no money up front, no money down, and then it's subsidized by a subscription offering.
Sure. Yeah.
And you're not going to tell us the prices of that at all right now.
To be honest, we have no idea, so I can't tell you.
Awesome.
We also at the step of arguing if we should go with the most expensive SD card or the second most expensive one. Because also even the SD card we are trying to include in this device didn't exist 6 months ago. So,
and the SD card is holding the keys to Lightning, your Lightning keys. What else is that SD card used for?
So how operating system and LND, so it writes
everything's on there.
Yeah, it writes a lot. You will still have the option of using the USB port for a static channel backup drive, like a cheap thumbstick. But yeah, I don't want to build a device that will stop working after 6 months or 1 year. So the minimum we expect from the SD card is 3 years. And the ones we are testing now come with a 5-year guarantee, and like a massive endurance numbers.
Because the concern there is, you know, SD cards have a higher failure rate, right? Especially if you're writing a lot.
Well, any flash memory ages when you write on it. SD cards by their size, I mean micro SD cards by their size, include obviously less extra memory than a big SSD drive. So cards with enough extra memory to cover for the failed cells inside the memory are way more expensive. And yeah, that's one thing we like waited to see on the market. And I mean, not a secret, because it will be part of our main specifications for this device. SanDisk came up with these new cards called High Endurance and Max Endurance, which are used for video surveillance, meaning constant writing. And this is what we are planning to use.
Awesome. So, I mean, the concern here is if that SD card fails, or if you're using a Lightning node with an SSD in it, that SSD fails, all your channel state, all of that is lost, and you will lose your funds if you don't have a static channel backup. Now, the static channel backup, though, if you restore from that backup, you lose your channels.
Yeah, but it still sucks. I mean, to be
the funds are restored on chain, right? You get your funds on chain, but you get hit with the on chain fees to do that, and then you have to hit.
And it's a very long process.
So, with the Noddle Dojo, one strategy around that is that you have two SSDs in there that are operating in a basically like a quasi RAID situation where one is backing up the other. So if something happens to one of the, if one of the SSDs fails or gets corrupted, the other one is there ready to go without a static channel backup.
It is an actual red one, mirroring red. So the anything written to the SSD won't be acknowledged by the system if it's not written to both drives.
So, okay. So in that situation, if I buy a Noddle Dojo and I have two SSDs in there, because that's how a Noddle Dojo comes, aren't they both getting hit with the same amount of writes at the same time? Wouldn't there be a situation where they both fail around the same time? Or is it just...
They do. So the idea is it's not very urgent because we are like monitoring the wear of SSDs on our test devices, which are much faster dying than usual users' ones. But at some point, you will see in the UI remaining lifetime estimation in percents for your SSDs. And what you will do is like when you reach, I don't know, 30% or 20%, you will replace one, rebuild the data on the first one, and then replace the second one.
It's like a graceful.
It also works for increasing the size. Actually, you can just plug a bigger one, restore the red on the bigger one, then replace the second one with a bigger one, and expand the partitions on that.
So it's like more for like a graceful migration.
Yeah.
So couldn't you, with like the Nautilito, either add like a second SD card slot or like a USB drive that you plug in? Like if the SD card's 64 gigs, couldn't I like plug in a 64 gig thumb drive and have the similar result there?
Well, that's actually something we looked into at some point for having like a RAID for only the LND directory of any Noddle between the internal SSD and an external thumb drive. But we figured that actually thumb drives are made for like very infrequent use, and they die much faster than any SD or SSD. So you could, but you wouldn't want to do that. And in addition, it's I wouldn't say maybe 100%, but 99% of thumb drives don't report any statistics about their internal state. So it would be very hard to detect an upcoming failure.
But what about like if you had a like USB SD card reader attached and then you have an SD attached.
You could probably put the same type of SD card. Yeah, that would probably be okay.
Like, is that not a good idea? Like, did I not just think of something there? Like, to have two redundant SD cards, just like Dojo has.
That external port is on the USB 2, so it would be very slow. We can think about something like that. Okay, that's probably something we could test.
But if you had like a similar chip that came with two SD card slots, then that would be way more practical than using that USB port. That's the issue.
Yeah. By the way, one very little known thing, although I probably mentioned it twice or three times already on different shows. If you have another one with disk encryption, which was like starting probably a year ago now, or maybe a little longer, it actually supports red mirroring. You can add an external drive and with a few commands enable the mirroring.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't realize that.
It actually has a red mirroring of only one drive configured. So if you add a second drive, it will just stupidly replicate on the external drive.
All you have to do is plug it in. You don't have to do anything else.
You have to run a few commands.
Oh, okay. Cool. I have another question. So there's a lot of comments here. I mean, it's the obvious thing when you see this Notalito, like the first thing everyone thinks about is mesh. You know, you see this little device. I'm imagining it in like a flea market. They're all like daisy chained off of each other, and then they hit the, you know, whatever the main server is, whether that's a Nautil Dojo held locally, or if that's the Nautil Cloud or something. Like, what are your thoughts on mesh? Like, is that something that's, you know, in the pipeline in the future? Would you need different hardware to do it?
It's been a long time. We are talking about adding like LoRaWAN mesh or even the Gotenna support to the Nautil. What most people probably don't realize is that with any kind of ISM band mesh radio, you get very little airtime. You get like 10 seconds per hour, maybe, of airtime. So that's very, very small data. It's basically enough to send a few messages or send some transactions, but you would not like stream blocks over that. So you need at least one other type of radio, and for that, Blockstream satellite is perfect to receive the blocks. That's like a minimum. Mesh alone won't solve any problem unless you are just remote controlling a node which is hosted elsewhere.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I guess if you're in like that flea market situation anyway, all you need is something that's broadcasting Wi-Fi in the area, and then all those Notalitos can connect to it anyway. And that could be something that's mesh enabled or not. It doesn't really matter.
You could imagine hooking up like the central Nautil Dojo with some good Wi-Fi card and use it as a router for everything else.
And then that Nautil Dojo could connect to like a local mesh or a Blockstream satellite or something like that. And then all of the Notalitos that are in range of it get benefit of that anyway without having to incorporate it directly into the Notalito, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Got it. So, I mean, we talked about earlier in the show, I mean, before we started recording, that we're going to try and keep this on the tighter side. I mean, I have my lady in the other room. I can hear her like unpacking boxes, probably a little bit angry at me that I am not unpacking boxes as well. My computer is literally sitting on boxes right now, and I'm using a secondary mic to do this show. I got my dog passed out next to me on an airbed. Do you think we've missed anything, guys, that you want to cover here in terms of the future of the Nautil and the Nautilito?
I like what Cantillon John said in the chat. It's like the parent-child model. I think that's a very good picture of it. Like the parent being the full node and the node litos being children of that node.
I'm being told I sound slightly like a potato. I apologize, freaks. I do not know which box my good mic is in. But I promise you next week for both Dispatch and Rabbit Hole, I will have better audio quality. And my internet here, though, is absolutely fantastic. Some of the best internet in the United States. So I'm doing that for you guys. We got this. Askew, you got final thoughts over there?
You know, like you were saying earlier, that eventually you'll have a lot of providers of these type of solutions, which is what you want to see. This what we want to see. You want to see a lot of hardware providers, a lot of cloud providers, a lot of liquidity providers, etc. And the trust models for everybody's are going to be different. They have to be clear for the users. That I think is really important to us, that people understand what they're getting into. But eventually, if you choose services like that, where you do rely on third parties to a certain extent, you have to understand where the risk is. And also, you know, the different providers that do like cloud infrastructure or things like that, that sometimes you feel like you'd want to move away from. We believe there's a big difference between like running stuff with like corporate companies like AWS and these type of providers versus owning the hardware yourself. And I don't think we necessarily make it clear, but everything that we build in the cloud is on hardware that we own. So we build stuff ourselves. And we think that's something that could be acceptable for a lot of customers.
I feel that. Do you guys think like in 5 years, the majority of Bitcoin users will be using either custodial providers or, you know, nodes hosted on like an AWS or like a corporate cloud? Like, is that a foregone conclusion, or are we going to actually have a large amount of users trying to use it in a more sovereign way?
I definitely see a future where everybody has several nodes. They don't use them for the same things. Some are more private than others. Some are more accessible. Some are probably hosted. Some are probably self-hosted. That's probably the mix that makes the most sense, at least for me. And you know, availability is something that you don't necessarily want to manage all the time. At the same time, you don't want to give custody to anyone else with Bitcoin. So there's different trade-offs that probably, in my mind, will require you to have several different setups and use all of them for different purposes.
I laughed internally very loud when the guy in the video mentioned partnering with AWS in the beginning.
You mean the CEO of Goldman Sachs?
Yeah.
They don't really get what we're doing over here, do they?
And then there's something a little more far-fetched maybe that we didn't talk about, but that I'd like to see eventually
us
doing is when you do host services for people, if they're hosted and replicated in a lot of different places, there is some kind of potential for you to offer jurisdictional arbitrage as a service. And with the way the world is going, I think that is a very strong value proposition. So eventually I'd like to see that happen.
What do you mean by that? Just different providers in different parts of the world so that even if there's bad laws in one area?
Yeah, that your data is never there because poof, it's not there anymore.
But are you saying that you foresee certain providers basically having infrastructure hosted globally so that within a certain provider you get that? Or are you talking about different companies?
Both. But yeah, option one definitely would be a good business.
So in option one, how do you foresee that? You see like you have servers hosted in, let's say, Switzerland and Paraguay, and then like if Switzerland passes a bad law, then all of a sudden those servers are wiped, but the Paraguay servers continue?
as a service.
Let's just say that's not things which were not done before by people we know.
Got it. Well, guys, this has been a fantastic conversation. I do appreciate your time. I appreciate all the work you've done in with Noddle. I love the hardware that I use from you guys. I've never had any issues with it. My SSDs haven't failed yet. You kind of got me a little bit worried when we were talking about SSD failures. So we'll see how long that lasts. But I do appreciate all the work you guys have done. And I do consider you both very good friends. I hope to see you again soon in person. Thank you. I appreciate you guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. And say hi to the family.
Will do. Likewise. And a big thank you to the freaks who joined us. Thank you again for dealing with my so-called potato quality on my mic. I do care about the quality of this show, and I do care about getting content to you guys that is actionable, helpful, and informative on a weekly basis. So I will continue my best to try and improve on that front. And that's part of why I moved. So I appreciate you all. I appreciate you, Keto. I appreciate you, Askew. I appreciate you, freaks. And if you're interested in the Noddle, you can go to noddle.it. That's NODL.IT. Until next time, thank you, guys.
Thank you. Bye.
Joe DiMaggio, Joe McCarthy, Richard Nixon, Studebaker, television, North Korea, South Korea, Marilyn Monroe. Rosenberg, H-Bomb, Sugar Ray, Panmunjom, Randall, the King and I, and the Catcher in the Rye, Eisenhower vaccine, England's got a new queen, Marciano, Liberace, Santiago.
Epidemics on the shore, China's under martial law, rock and roll a car.
Cheers, freaks. I'll see you Thursday for another Rabbit Hole recap, and I'll see you Tuesday for another Citadel Dispatch. Love you all. Stay humble and stack sats.